Chomsky on, and I said that same thing. You know, when you want to manifest something, you don't say, oh, please give it to me and all this. You feel like you have it. And she emphasized it further that you feel like you were walking around. It's already there. It's not something in the future. Yes. If it's something that, yeah, if it's something that's, in line with your purpose and all and serving you, you'll get it.
You know, this is a very interesting point, because a lot of people think, oh, manifestation. So what, like life is just the kind of cosmic shopping basket. Like, life is like a kind of cosmic eBay. You just kind of say, oh, I want some of this and I want that and I want 10 of them. And they'll manifest for you, right? No, it's not about that. The manifestation is all about you create your reality. And you create what you like, and it really happens. And the more you're focused in it, the better it gets. So the better, the fewer doubts that you have about your ability to manifest it. You know, it's one of these things, you know, it's like, I won't try it until I've tasted it. You know, oh, okay, how do you do that? You know, people have to jump over the barrier of unfamiliarity. This is, again, back to what we were talking about earlier, about how it can be difficult or it can be easy. And the easiness is this word which we were trying to find, which is kind of like a synonym, a simile of allow, you know, to dynamically allow a thing to happen by feeling the feeling of it already being there. So you could say, in the future, I am going to have a friend. You know, it's very unlikely I'll never have another friend again, right? So it's very likely that some point in the future I'll have a friend. So how do I feel when I have a friend? Oh, I feel, you know, loved and friended and cared for. Okay, so how does that feel? Well, you know, feels, you know, I don't get that feeling. All right. So if you then imagine yourself feeling that without those, you know, other feelings, and, you know, purify that feeling and focus on that feeling of, I have the friend, you know, I have that friend already, because time and space is an illusion. So if in the future I have a friend, then I've already got that friend. So it's just a matter of meeting up with them, and you go to the supermarket, and, you know, you're in the checkout queue, and the person in front of you is like fiddling, and then they drop their purse and all their coins go everywhere, and you help them pick them all up, and then you sort of look down, and then finally look up, and you look in each other's eyes and you know, the whole thing. That's what happens when you decide to focus on your future beingness. I always say, be kind to your future self, you know, because it's going to be you in a few minutes time, you know, a few minutes, a few hours or whatever. Don't make things hard for yourself. So, for instance, if you're just living alone, as a lot of us do, then it's wise at some point that you're going to have to do the washing up. So why not wash up as soon as you finish, or, you know, as soon as you take the stuff to the sink, don't just dump it in the sink. Be kind to your future self, so that when you come back to the sink, there's going to be clean stuff there, rather than having to clean up a whole load of dirty stuff where you then start cursing your past self, which again, because time and space is an illusion, you are literally cursing your own self. So how many of us do that? We curse our past selves and you know, scupper. We trip up our future selves.
Well, you know, the thing is, I think we can value our mistakes. In a sense, they almost shape us more than our successes. Do you understand what I mean? You know, if you got a turn, you go right or left, eventually you're going to get where you're going, just one way is a little longer. And another friend of mine used to say, why not now to approach your topic of, you know, don't just put it in the sink, wash up, you know, just do it, get it done. Then you can move on to something else. And it does make things easier. But as a longtime bachelor, not by choice. It's just I haven't found the right, you know, I've had many relationships, but none of them have stuck. But I have a lot of bachelor jokes along the lines of not cleaning up. For instance, you know, you have to wash everything, you know, vacuum all that, and then next year you got to do it again, you know, so what's the point?
That's the, yeah, I used to live, back in the days before while I was a biker, in my biker years, I used to live with this guy, I'm going to tell him, Mick the Greek, okay, so, he had this attitude that I'll only get dirty again, so why bother showering? Or cleaning right. at all? I'll just get dirty again. And I had to live in this old Victorian house, and fortunately for everybody, they lived, him and his girlfriend, who apparently had no sense of smell, who fortunately had no sense of smell, because this guy, what can I say? It was like, right. So you go up these stairs, right? You go to the top of the house and you're going up the stairs, and then suddenly it's like one of these gases that are slightly lighter than air that is, that forms a layer. There's a definite boundary layer that you're kind of, you can feel your head push its way through, like going from salt water to fresh water or something like that. It went from this kind of normal air into this, well, it wasn't air anymore. You really couldn't describe it as air. You couldn't say it was breathable. It was like being on an alien atmosphere with mostly methane.
That, you know what we call that? Call that thick.
Thick. It was thick. Yeah, you could slice it up and wrap it with aluminium foil. That's how thick it was.
I was going to say, he probably had to recreate the atmosphere from his own planet.
His natural environment. Anyways, yeah, so smelly people. I don't know where we got onto that one. Yeah, people who didn't care about the thing that only get things dirty again. No, anyway, so, I have to say that I'm not really successful at, doing the whole being good to myself. It's just part of these things that I'm kind of trying to retrain myself to be a decent human being to myself even, at least, because that's where we have to start, isn't it?
JP, would you agree, Keith, that also people that don't use deodorant are definitely noticeable?
You know, that depends a lot on what you eat. And
it does.
You know, if you eat cleanly and you do, deodorant is one of those products that many of them have aluminum.
Aluminum.
Exactly, yeah.
Some of them even have aluminium. The British ones have aluminium in them.
And I just wanted to segue real quick is that back in the 80s, we had a foreign exchange with some people from Senegal, Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And they came over, and we sent over some people, and they had no clue of what deodorant was or shampoo or things like that. And I can just share with you, that's where the term thick was originated from, because it was a different form of air. But what you had to do was really take a personal approach to these people and let them know that, you know, you smell and we want you to be, you know, part of our community and stuff. But right now we have to like hold our nose to talk to you. So we had to like introduce deodorant and shampoo and cleansing products to some people. And it's just part of life that in parts of the world that's just the way it is. And I just thought I'd share that story because to each his own, you know, because within all of them, they're all happy and smiley. They have no problems. They're dancing good and great. But when they came and sat into a gymnasium, I mean, we're talking triple thick, you know?
Well, you know, so everybody has their planetary atmosphere, isn't it?
You got to have the awareness. That's all I'm saying.
We have a planetary atmosphere. And, we don't know how we affect the world around us. You know, here's one example. We are not aware of the effect that we have on our atmosphere, on the, say, 6-foot circle around our beingness that we schlep around all over the place. We're not aware of the smell that we put out. You know, a lot of people use, products that have solvent in them. You know, they're walking around sort of emitting formaldehydes and other aldehydes and things like that, which a lot of people find very toxic. But at the same time, you know, there's, you know, everybody has their smell. It's good. But, you know, we have to kind of keep it regular. You know, I don't like to emit my smell, but I don't like to put on deodorants either. So I have to keep myself very clean.
And some people have problems with that, you know, and they get made fun of in public schools and stuff. Like, I remember a kid named Jeremy who, in fourth grade, he couldn't stop farting. I mean, he had constant
Don't tell
gas.
TJ. For God's sake, don't tell TJ. Anyway, you know, and poor Jeremy. Like, I pity
bad,
him.
You know,
not only that happens. Not only that, Rob.
Yeah.
He was called Jeremy and he farted. Did he wear glasses?
Well, but I mean, it wasn't his fault.
I know. It's just the one of the world's victims, you know.
And what a nice guy he was, but I mean, you couldn't hang around him, you know. It was just different.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, so here's another life hack. All right, so I've got a couple more life hacks, by the way. During my trip in Ireland with my delightful journey partner, showed me this new technology, right? It's called an ionic toothbrush. No kidding. It's got a little battery in it that has a very small charge that when you brush your teeth, it changes the charge of the surface of your tooth from one polarity to the other and thereby repelling plaque. And it just lifts it off. Did you know about that, people? It's really
cool. Those have been around for a long time. I've always wanted to get one. Forgot all about it till you reminded me.
So, ionic toothbrushes are about $15.
Yep.
You know, this is the sort of thing that we should be, maybe I should just get some in and start selling them on my website. Because these are amazing little things. And your teeth feel like pearls afterwards. It's amazing. It's like polished marble. Oh, you know, angels go. Hello? Somebody's got their razor on.
Ionic toothbrush.
Ah, ionic. And that's a bionic toothbrush, isn't it? A bionic, where you got, and when are we going to get transhumanist toothbrushes? What would they do? They would just take the bits off your... Anyway, meanwhile. So, yeah, toothbrush. That was the other thing that I've been discovering recently. So life hacks about teeth is you can keep them really clean using the ionic. There is a Japanese toothpaste, again, that has the building blocks for aforementioned teeth that apparently helps you to regrow your teeth. So far, not much results, people. But anyway, we'll see. But at least my teeth don't hurt anymore. That's all I can say. Water and soap? Soap. Yes. Yes, indeed. Soap. It's all anionic surfactants. Have you seen that on the side of the washing thing? It's all electrochemistry. It's very clever how soap works and stuff. So
all chemistry is electrical in nature.
Correct. It's all about atoms. Stillings, where are you? Where is he? Bring him in. Tell us about electrical nature of everything. Yes. So yeah, tell us about the electrical nature of everything, Keith.
Well, I've become friends with James McCann. He had him on my show a number of times. Do you know who he is?
Oh, he's the he was the one who put out that planetary thing that wasn't, and Alex quoted and it wasn't, and it was, yeah. What did he say about that? He didn't like that.
I'm not aware of that. I've only known him for about 6 or 8 months, but he's been he was a professor at Cornell University teaching physics and rubbing shoulders with Carl Sagan and studying data from the Viking and other space probes. And he says the universe, the electrical nature of the universe, you've heard those talk about that, I'm sure. It's always resonated with me. And he says that redshift that the scientists are reading is mostly a distortion due to the electric fields in the universe. So the whole universe isn't flying apart from us at ever-increasing velocities, which I've always intuitively felt, which means that stars and galaxies may well be much closer than we think. It also means that the actual age of the universe, the 13.5 billion year age that is mainstream science is mostly in agreement with, could be completely wrong.
Well, yeah. Okay, so look, let's bust one. Right? Let's bust a mainstream view. I like Dennis. All right. Here's my proposal. The sun is not hot. It is cold and electrical. And I can prove it. All right? When you're on the ground and the sun is shining, it's warm, isn't it? Yeah? Can I have a yes?
Yes.
Right. So you go up a hill, and when you go up towards the top of the hill, it gets cooler, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And when you go up a mountain, it gets cooler than up the hill, doesn't it? It gets so cool that it gets cold, and water freezes up there, doesn't it?
Certainly.
Yeah. And when you're in an aeroplane, they have to heat the air in the aeroplane to keep it cold, because keep it warm, because it's really cold outside, isn't it?
Indeed.
And when you're in space, you have to wear heated spacesuits, because it's really cold out in space, isn't it?
Well, if you are in sunlight, then you know, one side of you could be plus 250 degrees, the other side could be minus 250 degrees.
Is that
at least that's what they report about, you know, the measurements on the moon, for instance. The side that's in sunlight is extremely hot because there's no atmosphere.
Hmm. Well, I would say that it was because there was an atmosphere. How about that?
Well, also, the sun radiates energy, and it becomes thermal energy when it impacts
on atmosphere, on oxygen and nitrogen and atmospheric gases.
Yeah, or any physical, any kind of matter.
Yeah. So,
Keith, come on. What JP is saying is the sun's an ice cube, damn it. Right?
Well, it's not an ice cube, but it's radiating cold light. It's not radiating a warmth.
Could that have any connection to cold fusion?
Maybe. But it's certainly got a connection to plasma lights. Yeah. It's a plasma. Well, it's like a big plasma ball. You know those things that we had in the 80s with a sphere, and you could put your hand near it and you get these kind of tree sparks going towards it. Glass ball thing. There it goes. There it goes. So, hey guys, what's happening at your end?
All kinds of things, man. I've been so busy. It's just, I've been writing music again, JP. I've built my music studio, repaired my digital recorders and some of my effects. You know, a lot of them, they're just the memory batteries get old. The good old CR2032, if you got, that's the battery that a lot of these devices take. Very common, memory battery for electronics.
Again, on eBay.
Yeah, I did. I bought five of them on eBay for like $3.
Exactly. They're really cheap on eBay. So these...
You know what else I bought on eBay,
What did you
too?
Buy on eBay? Well, I
love
eBay.
I'm so excited. This is the most amazing thing ever. I've always wanted to get a second pickup for my 1973 Fender Telecaster bass. Gorgeous, gorgeous old bass. Sounds beautiful, but it only had the bass, the neck pickup. And I always wanted to add a bridge pickup. And I saw one I liked, a Fender Precision bass. Pick up from I forget who for $125. Found it on eBay for $7, and the shipping was either free or I think $2 or something. So I got it and took a hammer and chisel to my bass and installed it, and you know, drills and stuff like that, and put switches on them and rewired it so it's two volume controls, because I had never used the tone control. I like the full on top end, and it sounds so good. It's amazing. It has transformed my songwriting.
Is it nice with a pick?
I always use.
What's its
pick.
Quality? Is it thick and thick and smelly, or is it plucky? What's its quality of sound?
Well, it's a. First of all, it's a super nice bass guitar, Fender Telecaster, 1973, really good wood, really deep, thumpy sound, you know, with the neck pickup, but it never had enough high end for me. I always had to boost the treble up, and that gave it some noise. So I installed the bridge pickup, and now it just sings. It's got that really deep, solid, really, yeah, you'll hear it soon. Pretty soon I'm going to be putting some of my tunes up where people can hear them, you know, on my website, so you can just click on it, and you'll get to hear what it sounds like. It sounds so sweet.
There you go. Keith Roberts and the rest of his, Keith Roberts band. it's all you, isn't it? You play all the instruments.
Well, if I could find a good singer and a good drummer, I would do everything else. I am programming, with, Fruity Loops, my songs, like, a drum program and then keyboards. And then I take that over, transfer it over to the, digital, 16-channel digital recorders and, add in all the acoustic and electric instruments.
Wow, brilliant. So, and what do you use for, using Audacity
I've got Audacity, but I'm using Fruity Loops. It's something people, if they want to, can download for free and play around with. It's really fun and easy to use, and then watch some tutorials on YouTube and start really learning how to use it. I bought one of the higher up versions of it, and it's just brilliant. It's so much fun. I did it. I worked for about 8 hours yesterday just on music. It made me so happy.
You know, are we going to have an ultra spiritual moment?
Yes.
Thank you for that moment.
Let's say, yes, Keith, what he's doing is brilliant, beautiful, creative, taking the electronics and the energy and putting it together and formulating, bringing us some nice sounds. And I mean, talk about fun and doing the right thing with times, you know, on the downtime, you know, that's using our creativity, using our brains, I think, for a good purpose. And I really just want to say that I, too, I'm involved in that, and I think JP, you too, you like to dance around a little bit with that, and you know, it's kind of nice to, I think we all have a little musical touch in us, and I mean, Keith, have you heard JP open up some of his shows playing guitar even? I mean, we've been privileged to have that experience even, so I mean, it's kind of nice that, you know, we all have a little music in us, you know?
Well, JP, you're going to be hearing, I would be very interested. You know, I always wanted to ask you, JP, do you play lead guitar as well as rhythm?
Yeah, I do most things. You know, like you, I'm a kind of one-man band.
Because
I got no friends, because I do a radio station, and they say, why are you doing this, you know, stupid thing, you know, come out and play with us. No, I'm doing this, it's more important. You won't realize it yet, but it's important. Anyway, so... Yeah, so I don't get much chance, but I tell you one thing, I found a cheap looper, £45 on eBay, a little looping machine, and it can actually record up to 10 minutes of loop.
The looper!
Yeah, exactly, one of those. But,
You might want to try downloading the Fruity Loop program for free, because you can set up endless loops with that. I bought a device that is a USB and then takes it out to RCA jacks, input and outputs. And so then I can transfer it to my CD recorder and take it over to my digital recorders. Very easy way to work if you want. You can create endless. It's designed for looping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free.
Yeah. Well, apparently you can USB down a WAV file into this thing and like base it. So you can do that sort of thing with that as well. So yeah, not that anybody is understanding what we're talking about. So let's get it to a much more generic level. So here's the thing. As I was saying, you know, the quest is, who am I? Who are we? Where did we come from? What's the story? Why do humans behave so weirdly? You know, what's the story behind all that? And those are the things that I've been trying to find out. This is the puzzle that I've been giving myself. You know, what is the whole thing? And in doing this, as you were saying, around July, I had this great epiphany, which brought me back all the way to the beginning of it all. And I was at a point where I could have easily gone another way, but instead of avoiding it, I faced it. And we all avoid it because we don't know what we're facing. It's a complete unknown. But I had an idea, and I realized that at that point, as I faced this feeling, that it wasn't what I thought it was. And as I went back, I realized that it was a complex of feelings that were laid one upon the other. And the feelings were of, you know, certain things we'll have to deal with later and that have never been dealt with. You know how you're in an emergency situation and your friend dies, but you have to deal with the emergency, and then you have to deal with the grief of the losing the friend later. You just kind of put it in a little pocket.
Could you call it like an emotional amalgamation, possibly?
An emotional amalgam, what, like a dental amalgam?
Or like a multi-layer of different situations that are being interpolated at different cognitive senses in different portions of our brain and then released later on?
Well, it's a complex, you know, it's certainly complex. The reason that we can't unpick the whole thing is because we need to start at the other end, and the other end is obscured by whatever the whole mess has been made up around it, so we can't see it. It's like looking into the center of the galaxy. There's too much dust.
I think the listeners really appreciate what you just said about you coming to what you had seen, and then you said you had seen all of it. It was all placed before you. I think that's fascinating that you had that cognitive ability to even perceive that.
Well, isn't it? It's not a great thing, you know, because what I saw was my own part in a great deal of for want of a better word, murder and genocide on the revenge side. We got into revenge, basically. And we're on the other side of that. It's like this is the end of having eaten the apple of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which means you have to become good and you have to become evil, and you have to be okay with both sides and then bring them together. And that's what we're doing now. That's what this moment is about. This is why we have these people in our lives that sometimes are very, you know, they're unknowing. You know, it's like they have a long, it's like we were talking about before, you know, what do you do if you got a friend who is really otherwise quite nice but really smells bad? What do you do about it? I mean, what's the approach? What is the most harmless thing you can do about it? Because essentially, this is, you know, take it a bit further. Okay, so you got a friend who's otherwise very nice but has a really vicious tongue, you know, that says really mean things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, there's a lot of those.
Yeah,
awareness and verbalizations.
Yeah. So what do you say? You know, what do you say? If you're a friend, you're going to say the truth, aren't you? Go ahead.
You have, in my opinion, you have to gauge what they can hear, because some people just can't hear things. They'll take it wrong because it'll mean something. They won't necessarily understand that you're coming out of love and trying to be helpful. And other people, you know, it's fine. You just tell them, hey, you can do this better, you know, and they're, oh, cool. You just gotta read them. Read where they're at.
What about if you're trying to make someone better, but you're dealing with their addiction, and their addiction just keeps being thrown into your face?
That's the hard thing, isn't it? You know,
say like someone who's an alcoholic that doesn't understand and doesn't listen.
That they're alcoholics because they're not listening. That they don't understand, that they actively don't understand.
And what Keith says is you do care about them and you want what's best, but they still don't listen to your words. What do you do then?
Again, you have to read them, because it's some people are using it as a coping mechanism due to stress, and you can approach them. Other people at a fundamental level have just chosen to be that way, and there's not a damn thing you can do. Except, what I always say is occupy yourself. The better you can run your own energy, the more likely they will listen to what you have to say, or at least see your example and say, well, maybe I can do this in their hearts, you know. But some people, there's just no reaching them, man.
You know, there's a point. You can say things to everybody. You know, you can lay down some seeds. And then you have to walk away.
Because
all right, so here's the thing. This is back to the word allow. Right. This is part of this magical redefinition or re-finding a word that is this thing that is in the same way that you create a herb garden, say, and you plant the seeds and you put all the conditions right, you're allowing the seeds to grow into becoming plants. Yeah? That's what I mean by allow. You create the conditions in yourself that allow you to hold space for the things to arise. Therefore, by holding a feeling of, oh, isn't it nice to drive this car? That's how you get to drive the nice car.
You're expanding the spiral, JP. You're doing the right thing. You're giving the space for growth and creativity rather than clamping down the walls. That space is so important to be able to excel.
Yeah, you know, I was talking with my friends today, and we were talking about relationships, all this stuff, and you know, everything is all about contracts, isn't it? Well, wouldn't it be nice, instead of having contracts, we have expands? You get me? You know, you want to sign this expand? It doesn't contract people, it makes, you know, it just creates more abundance.
Yeah. You mean I have to do more work now, JP?
Well, no, it's easy. The less work you do, this is really easy to do this. Because most of the time in a contract, you have to, it's work to not, you know, invalidate the contract. But what about an expand, which, you know, you do whatever you do that, whatever you do fuels the thing that you're expanding into. You see what I mean? It's an expand. It's a place for us to expand into.
Well, it's the allow that you were mentioning. The allow is so important for that expansion to take place. Without the allow, you're dealing with a wall. You're dealing with, right, the allowance. You need the allow to be able to fly, to free, to be able to have that spiral. The allowance is important for creativity. You know, I think we are all our own worst enemies on this planet. And if we can allow things to take place, I think much more can happen. You know, that's just my spiral attitude, you know. That's my feminine side.
I think it goes to finding your passion in what you have to give. When you find your passion with what you give back to the world, I think that's when the excitement builds to the point that you're so energized and you just are so in love with life. And anything seems possible.
Really? Anything? Anything can be... you see... things can be possible, things can be probable. What do you want? Really, is we can feed what we want into the universal reality creating thing, and it will start churning out our good stuff. Like a lot of people are saying, you know, this is a very common theme, right? What you feel today is how you'll experience tomorrow.
Boy, I just got something big. I just got to get it out here.
Go on.
The allow is allow. The assume is a wall. We can't have the assumption. The assumption holds us back. The allowance lets us go. It's real simple. Allow. Doesn't that make sense?
Yep. Yep.
If we assume, we categorize, we put walls within, we hold back, It's I don't know. And I think it's not necessarily the growth that we're all looking for when we assume. I think when we allow, like JP said and Keith, I think we fly, we free, you know, it's definitely, that's just my opinion. I'm just taking this to another level because the allow is so much important than the assume because we get caught into a paradigm of assumption. And unfortunately, the assumption is what holds us back. And if we can remove assumption and put in allowance, man, we can all fly in this journey.
Well, yeah, well, the assumptions that people make, they create contracts, don't they? You know, that, I think, to assume that there's probably a whole load of legalese that works with that, you know, the assumption of something. You know, what's the root of assumption? Consume, assume. Consume means to something with. Yeah. Anyway, we'll think about that later.
And then in simpler terms, we put people sometimes in a box and we shouldn't. We should allow them not to be in that box. Because just because Jeremy farted in the corner doesn't mean he couldn't contribute, right?
Yeah, he's just, it's just like, it needs a filter. Maybe some people just need filtering. Maybe some people need more shungite.
There you go, the filter.
Welcome back, Keith.
I am back. I had to step away to briefly.
To briefly, do a Jeremy. So anyway, yeah.
I'm watching, well, never mind. No, I've got a lot is happening here right now.
What's happening for you?
Oh, well, so, oh, I don't
want to breath.
Talk
Take
about
a deep
personal,
breath.
I don't want to talk about personal stuff. Let's just say that, my attention is needed on a lot of different things right now.
All right.
I was looking to see if somebody had, gotten back that I need to talk to.
Uh-huh. So anyway, look. Let's get back.
Multitasking?
Let's get back to my story. You know, cause we're talking about like, who am I and where have I come from and all this stuff. Anyway, so in the last few months, and like I say before, you know, since July, there's been this unfolding, understanding of a potentially unfolding history of what really happened. WhatReallyHappened.com. But what really happened dot solar system and earth people and humans and, you know, what it's all about. I think in many ways, what is going on now in the world is it's a re-triggering of a large amount of trauma that has happened before over and over and over again. And it's happened over and over again because it happened a long, long time ago. And it's so long ago that we've all forgotten through the mist of time and trauma where it all started. And perhaps this is maybe, you know, one of these things. What do you do if your friend is unpleasant? You know, he might be a nice person, but he's got some terrible habits. You know, he might fart too much. He might just have a very strong body odor that is difficult to breathe around. What do you do with people like that? What do you do with people who are terminally stupid, but you'd like them, you know?
They've got this new video chat program. It's pretty cool.
What's that?
Well, they don't have to necessarily be with you. They can be, you know.
Oh, I see. They can be secluded into a box somewhere. Through a video link. Yeah, I like that. We can do that.
That's the world that we're going into.
Ah, right. Oh, hang on. No, we don't want to do that. Would be more convenient. See, this is the thing, you know. This whole thing is very convenient, you know. Separate ourselves from people and we don't have the mix and that's fine. But yeah.
Cubes. Boxes. Cubes.
Cubas.
We're born in a box and then we die and we put everything in a box.
Mm. Yeah. So.
I do want to comment on your question, JP, if I may.
Go ahead, Keith.
So let's take, somebody who runs a lot of stress, a lot of fear energy, and, for whatever reason, it's not an option, to extricate yourself. And maybe you don't even want to. You like the person and care about them, you know, but they just are like, you know. So what I have been learning how to do is not let them stress me. So wherever they're coming from, I remain in a really centered, calm state. because I found myself in the past, you know, getting, well, you know, trying, reacting, you know.
You buy into their drama and feed
exactly.
it. All right, so there we go. Just as something interesting gets going, here comes the adverts. So look, we'll be back on the other side, and we'll see if we can keep this drama going. And maybe learn a little about how to deal with people who are dramatic.
And stress.
Stress. How to deal with stress. Well, welcome back to that very extended Revolution Radio commercial break there. Courtesy of Studio A and Studio B, because it's JP here, covering for just about everybody on Revolution Radio, if not more people who have never existed yet. So, here we are. It's my fourth hour of live show, this evening, and, I'm ably accompanied by my, my co-hosting, fellow host, Keith Roberts and, Eagle Eye Rob. So, where were we? Yeah, so we're talking about, like, it's okay. So the story was, you know, looking for myself and where did I come from and all that. And I've had all these, readings, you know, you go to psychics, you know, what's my soul history? And, you know, I go to Bartsis and I go to, you know, and Tracy Kennedy and give me, anyway, all these, get all these readings and they all have this, like, different strange kind of telescopic views into, some kind of history that was quite extraordinary, really, and that has taken me on this journey, and I've taken I schlep everybody with me. You know, this is it. This is, you know, I tell the story of what I've been up to in the last few years, which is doing the Journeys with JP show. So that's part of it, and you know, some of the people that I've spoken to that have given me clues and tools and techniques in order to unpick the whole thing. And one of the things is actually Tony Minervino. I just want to give him the complete credit here. He called it Metatron's breath, and this is in through the nose and out through the mouth. Indeed. Actually do it through the nose, right? There's a difference. There is a big difference, because when you breathe in through your nose, you're actually filling your head with air. And that makes a change. Most of the time we starve our brain of oxygen. We starve our sinuses of oxygen. You know, feel how unusual that is when you breathe in through your nose. Feel it. You know, do it. It's really unusual. But if you get used to it, you get a tremendous clarity. And it also gives you an ability to hold a feeling that in most of the time we run away from. We have all these ways we run away from things. We run away from feelings, and one of the things that we call that is addiction. Another one we call is obsession, stuff like that. You have a word, don't you? Go on.
Metatron breath.
Metatron, yes.
Very familiar. Anthony, Tony, I'm glad that he brought that up. It's very important, like you just mentioned, getting the oxygen to our brain and the release of those toxins. But back to the topic at hand prior to the stress that we were talking about with Keith and dealing with certain thought processes and emotions. Wasn't that where we were going there?
Yeah, well, or, you know, unawakened people in general.
Frustration, patience, listening. I like to say listening is learning, but sometimes it's really hard to listen to people who are speaking to you when they don't even know they're speaking to you. So, I mean, there is a fine line, you know?
Exactly. You know, it's like some people walk around with as if they've got a bullhorn, and everybody around them is like holding their ears because they're so loud, you know? They're shouting everything.
And I think Keith, prior to the break, was frustrated about someone that keeps going at a higher frequency. And I'd like for him to expand a little bit more on this, because I think we all are dealing with situations the way Keith is also having a situation in his life. Because sometimes people's frequencies just become repetitive and high-toned to a point where it's the unawareness.
It's
bubble.
A distress. I mean, that when you're, when somebody's on, you know, when somebody's like talking like this, and there's kind of, there's a distress there. They're holding a distress up there. Although they can't quite go down. It's a bit like sitting on top of a drawing pin that you don't want to sit on top of, you know. And you kind of squeezing your buttock one way or the other to try and not pull your full weight on that pin.
And we as intuitives can feel their pain.
You can feel everything about it. The sound of their voice distorts your body. That's right. We dance. Everybody dances on a nano level. Back to nano. Everybody dances on a nano level to what people say. It's quite incredible. If you were to film somebody listening to somebody else talk, mm-hmm. We do it as babies, but as we're adults, we kind of minimize the movements, but we still do.
What do you think about accelerated volume talkers? Have you experienced that?
Accelerated volume talkers? Do you mean cram as much information into what they say, people who speak very fast.
Yeah, and then as they're speaking, they like to talk a little bit louder sometimes at you, and it gets, you know, sometimes the frequencies are like compounded. It's almost like another force has them not in a position of patience. It's almost like, where does that come from? And I was wondering if Keith could touch on that, because I'm sure he's aware of what we're talking about here. Or did we lose him?
I'm here. You know, JP, I did, you know, first of all, I'll give you guys, this is a key. JP, you may know this one, and you may as well, Rob. If you're having stress with somebody, or if you just want to communicate with them, I don't even care if they're alive or dead or on another planet or whatever. Sit. Get quiet in your mind, close your eyes, and visualize their face. Tell them what you need to say to them and watch their face. See their expression change, or if they react, how they react. You'll know whether or not they're receptive or not. I'm telling you, this works so well. I had a situation with a coworker that was driving me crazy because he was not a nice person, let's put it that way. I did this, and it lowered the stress level so much the next day. Mind you, no verbal words were spoken. This is where, like, Eagle, you were talking about, if, somebody's got an addiction problem or something like that, well, do that exercise, and watch their face, and you'll know if they're actually crying out for help or if they're just hell-bent on destruction.
Can I just add, Keith, this is advanced form of interaction with humans and other beings, and I just want to appreciate you sharing this because it's so important that people understand this, because it's much more productive to deal with these stresses the way you are rather than act out and, you know, accelerate them. I think this is great. Please continue.
If nothing else, you'll reduce your own stress and you'll kind of run it over in your mind. But I'm telling you, it really works. Everybody is psychic. Everybody is psychic. And we can do this. You don't have to believe it works or anything. Just try it, man, and tell me, you know, thank me later.
Yeah. And I myself do this this technique too, in a different form, but I'm just, you know, I'm complimenting Keith here and what he's sharing with the audience, and I think JP would agree too that, I mean, what really is accomplished when you yell at another person? You think about it. What really is, you know, what do we get done? And to take our stress level down to an intuitive awareness and acknowledgement is so much more advanced, so much more mature, so much more human. And it just really makes sense. And I like the way Keith says, get into a quiet space. And that's really important when you're dealing with situations of stress. Agreed?
Well, I think, you know, the quiet space and the breath together, that's the thing that will calm everything down. And when you can, if you can do that, like just take a second and then step back into the situation and then to sit with the feelings that are uncomfortable, because this is the problem. You know, we present each other with uncomfortable feelings. Yeah, all right, I might smell bad, all right, or I might be too loud and like burn your ears when I speak, or all of these things. But what I always find is that anybody who inflicts on somebody has been inflicted on, and they weren't able to process it, so they inflict on others to make people feel the way they felt, because I believe that everybody shares their feelings. And we either share our feelings actually saying, well, I feel like this, or, you know, you make people feel the way you were made to feel.
A lot of it is unconscious projection, when people aren't willing to deal with their feelings. So they see those reflected in the people around them. They say, you're doing this, you know, when in fact they're running the program themselves.
Correct. And that's what we call projection. And well, so here's an interesting, you know, perspective on this.
This is getting good.
In the work that I've been doing over the last few years, and, you know, again, in learning about myself, I've been able to find out ways of deprogramming all these brainwashing that I was talking about earlier. And each of the brainwashing moments is a trauma. You know, I've been researching the whole MK Ultra Nazi mind control thing, and they're basically exploiting this, what we'd call a bug in the human system. And then I go back and I discover that this bug in the human system is connected with this historical experience that I was talking about that I had in July. That the human experience is forever re-triggering this same trauma, which puts humans in a state of panic and loss of self. And, you know, at that point, you can be brainwashed, mind controlled, whatever. And certainly what they, you know, the oldest trick in the book is divide and rule. You know, a third party comes in into a otherwise harmonious group and starts speaking to both sides, saying how bad the other side is. There's various other variations on that theme, but that's divide and rule, and that's how we are. And we're divided as many times as you can imagine. You know, so we divided men and women, we divided rich and poor, we divided old and young, we divided east and west, we divided north and south, etc., etc., etc. We're just divided, for, you know, chopped up. Like a julienne's and then finally grated. You know, everybody's ground down. Everybody's, you know, flesh and bones have been ground into the steel. We've been doing that for far too long, and we've been allowing that to happen to us. So it's time for this to stop. And this is all the draconian system, and we need to realize that everything that we see is, you know, the is essentially all the Matrix stuff. The Matrix is the Orion Empire. And it carries on through the Babylonian and, you know, Roman and British and German and Nazi Fourth Reich Empire that we find ourselves in today. As we speak.
You touched on something earlier there about when someone releases a trauma, it's because they've received a trauma also in their past.
If somebody traumatizes you, so for instance, say my father was a browbeater, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody who just wouldn't stop talking at you, like hammering you with, it's called a browbeating, you know? Mm-hmm. Hammer you with words that never give you a chance to respond, you know, always just hammer. You will end up as the type of person who browbeats other people, which is how his father became a browbeater in the first place. Mm. You know?
So you have the option to perpetuate the emotion, or how about to process it and to take the high road and to forgive?
Yeah. Well, you have to understand first that you've been triggered. This is the thing. When you're triggered, you don't know you're triggered. It's like when you're stupid, you don't know you're stupid. No, but when you're triggered, you don't know that you're triggered, and you're behaving as you normally do. It's normal for you.
Because, I mean, I have a little example I can share with that.
Go ahead, please.
Well, I've recently been kind of a target, you know, for someone's negative emotion towards me to the highest level. And I feel like, you know, that's been for a certain reason. And obviously, everything happens for a reason. And I feel in this world, I was chosen to receive that energy, for some reason, because I can handle that energy where not many other people can. But when someone threatens your life, it does change how you act. And when someone is going through stress and they project stress onto you, it's real important that you do try to understand where they're coming from. And me, as an advanced being, not to brag, but I forgive those people, and I forgive those that project their stresses upon to me. And I feel that's important. And I'd like to let that be an example for some also, because I too, like you, JP, you had a choice of going either way. I mean, I had a choice of absolutely burying someone and destroying their life. But instead, I forgive them and understand that, you know, we do have stresses in life, and sometimes they have to be released. And it's just part of the way we are. I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, you see, this is where it comes, you know, people dump on each other. You know, and sometimes it's okay. Yeah, for instance, you might be getting paid by them for that to happen, like be a psychologist or, you know. But generally, you know, nobody likes to be dumped on. And it's better that you actually deal with it sort of head on. So the way I work with it is by inviting the client, let's call them the client, inviting the client to sit with the uncomfortable feeling, because that's the last thing that they want to do. They do everything. They jiggle around. They, you know, smoke and drink and party and talk and all of these things in order to not sit with the feeling that just is always there. So it's always like that, walking monster in your dream that you, no matter how much you run, is still just behind you. Because it's just behind you. It's not actually something separate from you. It's you.
It's a vibration that is obviously carried. And I'd like to even have Keith chime in here. Keith, what do you feel about the vibration of then taking that to forgiveness?
Forgiveness is huge. One of my exes later got married, and her husband was murdered, and she forgave the murderer. I personally think she had to for her own sanity, because that kind of thing can just eat you up to pieces. But, you know, the thing when I think about trauma is I think about healing and the various modalities you can use to address that. For myself, for instance, if, say, I have an aching back or you know, I come down with a cold or whatever it is physically, I ask it what the message is, and I ask it to tell me. And it's like, JP, remember when you were cooking whatever it was and you burnt it? And I said, just ask it to tell you when it's ready, because there's you know, everything has a certain degree of consciousness, in my view. At least that works for me. So to get into, ask it what the message is of that pain, that stress, that emotion. Because it is a message. You're feeling it for a reason. The way I've done it is to go deep into, you know, again, get quiet, really quiet your mind, get into a meditative state, and look at what pictures unfold. What I've done with these traumas is time travel, you know, in my mind or whatever, back to the incident, and heal the trauma and recover that piece of me that was cut off from energy running.
That's it. And that really is the job. And that's the work that we do, because that piece of you is the monster that is chasing you in the dream. And what we have to realize is that it's not a monster. It's just an uncomfortable feeling. And if you sit with it, you realize it then morphs into you at a tiny age. And how bad you're made to feel. Or, well, here's the thing. I believe that all of our previous lives are concentrated into the first 7 years of our life. So that all of our previous life traumas, they all are focused by a single trauma, each in our upbringing. Consider that.
The single trauma of being born into this crazy world?
Well, that, okay, the single trauma of separation brings, that's the one. That's the one that, you know, I don't know, you find it, but it does represent the human birth trauma, which is the Lyran trauma of being exposed to the reptilians who had been exposed to exposure and betrayal. And that's what they did with us.
I so want to comment on that, if I
Please,
may.
Go on.
I wasn't laughing, thinking that's silly. I was laughing as kind of a resonance. Going all the way back to why is the world the way it is, right? Why is it so messed up or, you know, explicative of your choice? I have several thoughts on that. One of them is that we are impinged upon, like, from a whole different dimension that wasn't even supposed to be here. But another one is that we separated from Source intentionally that we may know the joy of union or reunion, you know, as we move forward and grow spiritually, moving back towards Source. But there's a third one. If you think of us as immortal souls, you know, what is time? You know, we're beyond time and space. Maybe we just wanted to have some drama, watch a good movie. So we decided to create this whole incarnational cycle with all these different levels of intrigue and challenge.
Yeah. But enough with the drama. Alrighty.
Well, we asked for it.
Yeah, we're done
with Obama.
We're done with it.
Most of us are on the verge of graduating, I think. I think that's part of what this big cycle is we're seeing unfold.
So, more drama is, and this was part of the thing. You know, what do you do about people who, you know, come into your life and, you think everything's going to be fine and then you realize, oh, I need to bring my dog with me and the dog is a beagle. it's like destroys all your furniture and runs around the room like a, What do they call that thing? A wall of death. You ever seen a beagle do the wall of death around a living room? It's just incredible. They literally run sideways around the rooms. Very fast. Anyway, so.
So the last minute deal breaker.
Yeah, is a deal breaker something that prevents you from making the deal? So it's just a phrase I've never understood. What is a deal breaker? Because people break deals, don't they? Which is a good thing, but a deal breaker is a bad thing.
Well, like you were saying, contracts before, we uh-huh. create these contracts
uh-huh.
in our minds, in our thoughts, you know, in our intuitions, and, you know, we formulate them, and it's almost like sometimes we put ourselves into contracts that we really shouldn't. Would you agree? I mean.
Well, every contract. How about that?
There we go.
The entire concept of contract.
Yeah.
Is something that, again, you know, we come from universal spirit.
Yeah.
And we condense ourselves, we contract ourselves into the human body.
So to expand on that thought, could we say that we are our own worst enemy then?
We are the monster in our dreams. I'll let that sink in a little while. What is that like? You know, everybody who's like the worst enemy of you, the worst thing that you want to run away from, you have those feelings inside you. Doesn't mean you are like that, but did you have the same driving feelings? And if you can be compassionate to, forgive, really, then this is the thing, you know, the hardest thing to forgive is the thing that you really, you know, that is like, to you is unforgivable. There are, you know, everybody's got their line along which, that's my line of unforgivability. For some people, it's like really close. It's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a term, cross the line.
Yeah.
And where is that line, you know? And I've recently had it tested in my life, and I've decided to go with the direction of forgiveness. So, I mean, it's definitely, you know, something that we all get faced with.
Is there really unforgivable behavior? And what does forgiveness really mean? So, for instance, and I've used this analogy before, but say there's the famous film star who is crossing a bridge and there's a big crowd and there's somebody who's a real fan, really excited and wants to see the famous film star, gets up on the parapet of the bridge to get a good look. And as the film star goes past, this person falls off the bridge, breaks their back and is paralyzed for life. Okay. Meanwhile, the famous film star just goes past. In the mind of the person, it's the fault of the person who, you know, it becomes the fault of the famous film star. And they, you know, they, instead of becoming a fan, they become their worst enemy. You know, crazy people do this kind of stuff. But this is, what it is the attachment. You know, what's crazy about it is the attachment to the person. You know, if somebody could just say, well, you know, well, I was a bit stupid then. I was just so overexcited, you know, at seeing this person. You know, but laying in bed for 32 months while the back repaired, you know, flat on their back, thinking only of that moment over and over and over again in their minds. That's not a good scene, is it?
No, that's a bad thought process, a downward spiral.
Exactly.
Those people need to turn into Revolution Radio Journeys.
They should be listening to
the
show.
Proper spiral.
So yeah, so this, and this is what I'm talking about, forgiveness. Now, as far as, so say, you know, this person recovers their ability to walk and they, you know, get up to walk and they can, you know, they walk again and they, blah, blah, blah. And then eventually they see the famous film star 30 years later, you know, and it's like, the fan just goes up and might say something completely incomprehensible that the star doesn't remember at all. I don't remember even crossing that bridge. Yet it was such a moment in that other person's life. So what I'm saying is it's all about perspective and it's all about how you can take something personally or you can let something go. You can give forward. Right? This is Ubuntu, is giving forward.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Forward,
yes.
Giving. Forgiving. Having a forgiving attitude.
Or means proactive.
Means
forgiving.
Exactly. Forgiving. You give forward. It's like, it's nobody's fault. There's no blame here. And the blame is the fuel that keeps the whole thing sustained.
And you know what that is? That's proactive. And proactive.
It's Prometheus.
That's attractive.
Well, well, well. Yes, indeed. No, we're not playing with you, Venus, alien girl. You know, Venus is a nice place, apparently. They don't live on the surface, obviously. They live on the inside because it's, you know, not very, it's a bit craggy on the outside. Meanwhile, there was a caller. You can try calling again. Unknown number you came through. I don't know. You may have come through on try and do a caller ID because otherwise something goes wrong with Skype and we can't pick you up. Anyway, I'm gonna try something next time if that works. So... So, yeah, so we're talking about Venus and Mars and Hira's coming out with some very lovely Martian poetry. Very good, very good. So they sent us to Mars. Yes. So, and she says, if the aliens wanted you, that you wouldn't be born here, so don't worry about it. So anyway... Meanwhile, yeah, so it was all about this. It was all about, like, where do we all come from and what's the reason why we all totally screwed up and what's PTSD and what's all that about? And it all comes down to unexpressed grief that we've carried for more than 100 million years or something, if not longer. And that's the big thing, is like it's so long ago that we don't remember, our brains don't remember, but our bodies and our souls and our DNA remembers. And I believe that every strand of DNA that has been put into us has its own traumatic origin, that the people who put us together didn't quite understand how it works, that we can experience all those, and we can experience all of those traumas through the DNA, through the knowledge of the DNA. And it becomes our job now to ameliorate and rejoin all of those traumas. So not only do we need to become one with our inner child and our inner Lyran, but we also need to become one with our inner reptilian and mantid and bird and all these other creatures that we are a kind of hamburger of. Please go ahead.
The trauma. Hardest thing for...
Go ahead, Keith.
The hardest thing for me was not the times I was victimized, but the times I victimized in previous lifetimes. It's very difficult. Some of the, when you start to do this work, and JP, your comment about grief, man, there were times when I was walking around wondering, how could I be a vessel for so much sadness? So much, that it just seemed like an ocean and I was too small to hold it, yet there it was. But over decades really that I've been peeling back the layers, I think I've gotten pretty close to healing all of them. None of them's come up in a long time. For me, they would just sort of bubble up, and I would feel pain. I'd do the meditation, look at the stress of it, and see these things. And it wasn't till towards the end of it that I started working on the times when I was, a soldier in a war, and I killed somebody, or I was participating in Mayan temple where they were cutting out hearts, you know, stuff like that. But you have to forgive yourself and understand that you've paid, you know, in my case, I knew I'd paid the karma over and over again. But for some of those, it took me days to kind of emotionally restabilize, even though I knew, you know, I did the crime and did the time. Still, when you bring those up, but even those parts of you where you were the aggressor or the protagonist, if you will, those were the most difficult ones for me to heal. To even look at, I should say.
Could you say that it's not by coincidence that trauma rhymes with drama? I mean, within yourself, if you think about it, trauma.
Yeah, where's Seth Michaels when we need him?
What about karma creating drama?
There you go.
Resulting from trauma.
From too much Obama.
And then you run
from being raped by Obama. Oops, no. Who said that?
Don't forget about your dogma.
That was Larry Sinclair.
My karma ran over your dogma.
Your karma? Your karma.
I have a car mechanic.
Yeah, where is Seth?
Where's Seth when you need him? Seth speaks. So, yes. So anyway, so to that end, I've learned about the Lyrans and the reptilians, and you know, so what I'm seeing is that there's a lot to learn. There's a lot of this project to get behind, because like I've only found like one or two of the perhaps 12 or so correspondences, because I believe now, right, we've got 12 races that make up us, that each of those races has a trauma. And that we are here, the humans are carrying all of those traumas. And one by one, if we can reconnect each of those strands and bring them back to a point of neutrality, then that's what we can create as an ascended human. That's what it will be.
Neutrality, balance, non-judgment. I like it, JP. Yeah. You're talking importance for our future here on the planet.
Now, here's the thing. I was with my friends this evening, although they're in my dancing in my kitchen. They do a lot of body movement and body work and stuff, and they were learning to be to do the tango, and we were talking about it, and I was kind of watching them, and I observed that the woman is really basically dancing around the man. like a pole. It's like you just have to, you really had, you just have to stand still and counterbalance what the woman's doing. Cause the guy wasn't getting it, you know. And as soon as I said that, and he's German, and he said, Stimm! And it's suddenly he turned into a tree trunk. He got it. You know, he got, this is what I see now. And he connected with the German for tree trunk, which is Stamm. No, it's not Stumm, it's Stamm. And, like stem, you know, and, he got it from the vibration of it. And then, you know, I was playing a tango on my guitar, and there they were doing it perfectly. And you see, you know, Lucy was very triumphant because it's like, finally he gets it. And it was all about having the right frequency of being the tree, you know, instead of being led around, but to be standing straight.
Stamm.
So there you go. If you're going to do tango, guys, be Stamm.
Wangle tango, wangle tango.
Tango biscuit Charlie Alpha. Well, that's what we want. Yes, indeed. Yeah, well, there you go. We have a surprise caller. And let's see. More Arizonans, I think. Well, I don't know. Toe Leg, brother, where are you?
The other universe.
In the other universe. Welcome.
Yeah.
Hi. Talking of Pleiadians.
Yes, sir.
I'm
actually, to answer your question, I'm in Tucson.
Tucson, because we got Keith, who's also in... whereabouts in Arizona are you, Keith? He's away from his keyboard.
Yeah,
sorry, I had my mute on. I'm within about 20 minutes of Sedona.
Ah, okay.
So there you go.
I'm in southern Arizona in Tucson.
Yeah, I know Tucson.
Yeah. It's big and growing.
Excellent. So, what news of the Andromedan Council?
What news?
What's been going on?
What
news of Tolek?
Well, he's busy. He's good. Before we talk about me, JP, how are you?
I'm fantastic.
Busy man.
Very, very, very busy.
Yes.
You know, I'm doing 19 shows a week and producing 20 others, and then I've got webinars on top of that. And then, you know, I've got a life, you know, people don't realize I got a life, you know, I got a guitar, I got friends, I got people.
Yeah.
They sing and they, you know, dance tango in my living room. It's great.
Right. They come over and visit.
Yeah.
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 I'll switch gears.
Sup.
It's great. It's great to be in the desert Southwest again. I'm breathing dry air. It's not saturated with rain. It's clear. It's warm. It's comfortable. It's a nice change of pace. In terms of my contacts, with the Andromeda Council, they're fine. The people on all the biospheres are not only ready, willing and able and stand ready to help as things continue to ramp up, but they're excited. They're excited because we're in another period of major growth and change. And things are moving along at a rapid pace. So they're getting more and more excited the closer we get to their vibrational rate.
They so are. This is the thing. This is, this thing that I was talking about earlier about, you know, years ago, a synchronicity was something you'd have like once a month, or maybe, I had one a few months ago, you know. And nowadays synchronicities are at such a rate that we're unable to explain what that synchronicity is before another one comes along.
I used to count them. Like, oh, okay, you know, and it would take, like we've talked about in the past, it would take, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks or a month or a month and a half. During these times, it's like every other day. You know, all I have to do is pay attention. And many times there are synchronicities or confirmations every single day that happen in my life. It's, It's surprising.
It gets more than a day. I mean, I'm looking at them like every half an hour and, or, you know, that sort of frequency.
Yes. Yeah. It's quite frequent. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, apparently, like the jolt sound zap. Zap says hello to Tolek. He's a regular listener. Zap.
Oh, okay.
Z-H-A-P.
Yeah, okay.
Like the jolt. I don't know what a jolt sounds like. Like zap. Maybe it's zap or something like that. But, so what's going on?
I understand that, you took a bit of a trip to a little country called the Emerald Isle. And you didn't come back with any Gaelic brogue, sir.
Any Gaelic brogue? Well, we went to Blarney.
Yeah.
We parked there, but the castle had just closed for the night and we were just on our way on the road. So we drove past it. So we were very sensitive, you know, we can feel every place that we were at. So it was really a very, very good trip. And it was magical. We did it completely spontaneously. I mean, the lady I went with was absolutely brave to do it because I said
she was the right lady.
She was just perfect. She was just a beautiful, beautiful energy that we had between us. And it was a pure, a very pure relation that, just made magic wherever we went. It was felt like, you know, I was walking around kind of like this. It was like this for a whole week, you know, the whole week. Everything was like this. It was all green, all shades of green, you know, butterflies and brightly colored houses and birds and Twitty. Yeah. It was just fantastic. Just a really, really fantastic thing.
I'm really happy for you. It's wonderful when those kinds of experiences happen, and while you're there, there are all of these little magical moments. Then you're not even trying to make them; they just happen.
Yeah, it was a real, it was an ayahuasca type experience.
Could we call it a breath of Metatronic air?
Well, it could be. We certainly did use Metatron's breath a lot. There was a lot of processing. It was great. Yeah, it was really, really fantastic. You know, when I say, you know, it was great. When I say it was great, it wasn't brilliant all the time because we had to process feelings. I had to get, you know, there was a soul fragment of me in Cork, and the rain was pouring down, and I was shedding tears like the rain outside. It was quite an experience, but it was retrieving a soul fragment there.
Was it cathartic? Was
very, very, very completely
good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was, you know, I got him back. I so got him back, and
that's good.
We woke up some saints. Yeah, I'm not actually kidding. We came back, and a psychic medium of mine, a friend of mine, said, "What have you done? There's all these saints that have come to me. I recognize, you know, she was a Catholic.
No.
And she recognizes all these saints that have like appeared to her kind of sleepy and grumpy and like, what the hell's going on? You know,
Came back with Matthew, Mark, Luke and John.
Oh, and the other 13 and the females, you know.
Wow.
You know, there were like more than 12 like female apostles.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody talks about Jesus as female, because they're actually better students.
Yes. Right?
They're actually much better students than the guys. The guys are like, let's have a party. Oh, I like this.
They took better notes.
Right.
Well, they take good notes, really neat. You know, women are with brilliant, neat, note-taking lines, and like, mine is just like somebody's dipped some spiders in ink and let them wander across the paper. So,
as you're quite aware, with the different interactions that we've each had with women, they have these, it's hard to explain, but they have these finely tuned gifts, and they can, I believe, far more easily tune into the higher dimensions than we can as men on this planet. I just think that it's the way that they're wired. I've been amazed at the women that I've been blessed to speak with, to interview with, to share time with, on these different radio programs and interviews and roundtables. And they're like off the charts, in sync, lockstep, higher dimension. They're very awake, very aware. Sometimes
That's right.
just That's right. At least speechless.
It takes blokes a lot more energy to do it. And yes. I think that a lot of men who are into the healing world, it's not easy. It's really not easy at all to be that sensitive and be in the male world, you know, for a man or a woman. So it's, you know, like a lot of people, it's kind of numbed out of you, but you can still feel it, you know?
Yes.
And you get migraines because of it.
I've not heard that term.
Migraines.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
But that, you know, that's the sort of thing that is connected with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard you speak with Simon yesterday, and he sounds a lot better.
Oh yeah, he's well over the kidney stones.
If
anybody knows what a jack stone looks like, you know those jacks that you play with as a kid, you know, and jacks. There's this so there's this one thing that's got like 6 points and it's sticking out in all directions. That's what a kidney stone looks like.
Ooh.
But it's like each point is like sharp razors. It's like a crystal blade. So that's why they're painful. I was saying to him yesterday, I had a girlfriend who had a kidney stone, and passed it. And it was 2 or 3 nights of hell. It wasn't nice to be with her or to be her at all. But,
the name Alex Collier is coming through.
Yeah, we're doing a webinar on Friday, alexcollier.org, number 19. Listen, the world is heating up. The world is becoming the world that Tolek and Alex and Simon have been talking about.
Yes, it
and
is.
And sure.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying, and. You know, this is the moment we've been talking about. And people haven't believed us until like just a few weeks ago.
Right. And how many years have we been talking about this?
Yeah. Well, many, you know.
Yes, I know. Yeah. It's actually kind of fun because, you know, that little teeny ego part of myself goes,
yeah. It's the year of I told you so.
Told you this, right? Told you. Yeah. 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 It's okay. Every once in a while.
Yeah.
Told you.
But we do also have to realize that the whole world is going to crap. But you see,
it has to
dissolve. Really, right. We need to allow everything. You know, there's, you know, you're making a video and instead of cutting from one scene to another, you dissolve into black or you dissolve from one scene to another. And that's really what we need to do. We need to dissolve ourselves from the old self, which had a lot of anger and selfishness and revenge and all that stuff. That has to be old school. That's the sixth ray. That's the sixth ray of the Piscean age. And it's coming to an end and you might as well end it now, but it's the most sustaining kind of person with the sixth ray is somebody who holds on to grim death. That's a sixth ray quality, you know. In some ways it can be very good. Persistent and, you know, consistent. But in other ways, it's just holding it up for everybody. And the best thing is to take a breath and let go.
Right. I don't know about you other gentlemen that are here, but as we continue through this time of revelatory transitions with more things being revealed, certainly in the Western, you know, as we would say, Western European world, including the Americas.
Thank you very much, Tolek. Listen, Keith has got a show coming up next. I think it's next. When is it, Keith?
No, I don't. A. Matt Painter's next, and on Studio B is Barbara DeLong.
All right. Well, good night, everybody. I've been here for 4 hours. Thanks very much, Tolek, for calling in.
My pleasure.
Great to hear from you again. Keith Roberts and Eagle Eye Rob from New Mexico, thank you. You've been my gallant assistants during this whole 4-hour stretch. Thank you, and good night, everybody. Good night.